in. Good afternoon. It is a Thursday, December 29th, 2016, 12:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You're tuned into the Now program, and it was quite shocking news last night to learn that 24 hours after the death of Carrie Fisher at the age of 60, that her mother, Debbie Reynolds, passed away at the age of 84. I had the chance to interview Debbie Reynolds. Boy, it's been about 13 years ago now, and it's only a 7-minute interview, but we're going to play it today in honor of her. But before we do that, we want to chat with a man who we chatted with earlier on in the week, as he knew Carrie Fisher, didn't know Debbie Reynolds as well, but has a funny story he'd like to relay in regard to her. Ellie, the King of Broadway. Ellie, are you there?
It's good to be the king. Yes, I am. Thanks for having me, Scott.
Well, thank you for coming back. Who would have thought this would have happened? When we were on the other day talking about Carrie Fisher, 24 hours later, the passing of Debbie Reynolds.
Devastated. Absolutely devastated. As her son Todd said, she looked at him and said, I want to be with Carrie.
Yeah.
And minutes later had the stroke that killed her.
And pretty well everybody seems to feel that she died of a broken heart.
Absolutely. Yeah, don't let them tell you that that can't happen, because it obviously just did.
And it's interesting because this is a show business family. Obviously, Debbie Reynolds, a very famous woman. Carrie Fisher, a very famous woman. And we tend to think that those mother-daughter relationships are not close. Well, apparently this one was.
Yeah, it appears that, you know, they had their years. They had their fights, but you know, as I mentioned yesterday, they lived a driveway apart. Debbie at the top of the driveway and Carrie at the bottom. And if you don't mind, I'll repeat what I said yesterday. Debbie used to call Carrie every morning and say, hello, Carrie, this is your mother, Debbie. Mm. So they had this amazing relationship.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think you could see it in the clips that were shown last night, that as time went on, they really developed a very special relationship.
Absolutely. They like I said, they talked every single day. They were an integral part of each other's lives, and I had an opportunity to attend, I had an opportunity to attend an evening with Debbie Reynolds at the 92nd Street Y back in April of 2013. Leonard Lopate was interviewing her about her book, Unsinkable. Are you there, Scott?
Yes, I'm still here, yes.
Oh, okay, great. And afterwards, it was quite interesting. I tried to get in to interview her, but they just wouldn't let me. She wasn't feeling that great. Apparently, before the evening, she had signed a bunch of book plates in her dressing room, and she wasn't doing any actual signings. When you bought the book, you got the autographed book plate to put in it later, but she was doing pictures. I was a little disappointed because I've been a fan of Debbie Reynolds my whole life. Unsinkable Molly Brown is absolutely positively one of my all-time favorite movies, and I had my DVD copy with me, and I was hoping to get that signed, but they weren't hearing any explanation I would give. And there was this big 6'3" football player build guard standing in the line to make sure that nobody asked her anything that they shouldn't ask her. And when we went to the signing after the talk back, I had my book, and I had my DVD underneath the book. And as I got up to her and we were able to take picture with her, I slipped the DVD out from under the book, and she looked at me and says, "Oh, that's my favorite of all the movies I've done, Unsinkable Molly Brown." And I said, "That's my favorite too." And she said, "Would you like me to sign that?" And I said, "I would love for you to sign that." And she says, do you have a pen? They wouldn't give me one. So I did. I had my trusted Sharpie with me. And as I pulled out the DVD and the Sharpie, this big, hulking guard came over and said, "What are you doing?" And she looked at him and said, "You know, this is my event, and if I want to sign something, I'll sign something." And he threw his hands up in the air and turned around, and as he walked away, he said, "Huh, nobody follows the rules anymore." And she lovingly signed the cover of the DVD and gave me a big kiss on the cheek and said, "Thank you. You made my day."
You know, there was something about her. There were a few people who were really movie stars. And if you look at Singin' in the Rain and the unsinkable Molly Brown, where do you think her place in show business is?
Well, she's obviously one of the greats. I mean, you know, she did Tammy as well. and just so many movies and such a history. And she was such a versatile and wonderful character. She could sing, she could dance. Actually, she learned to dance for Singing in the Rain. She didn't know how to do it before that.
And she was only 19 at the time.
Can you imagine?
19 at the time, working with these legends in that movie, Donald O'Connor. It's amazing what her life was. And, you know, with all the hubbub of Carrie Fisher's death on Tuesday, it's, you realize what a talented family and what a horrible, horrible event and what the family must be going through right now.
Oh, I can't imagine what, you know, her brother and her daughter and everyone else involved, they must be just beside themselves. It was a horrible, horrible shock. I had heard just before, as I was going down to do rehearsal for my Kanika show last night, I had heard that she was rushed to the hospital, and then after the show, they told me that she didn't make it, and we were all just absolutely devastated.
Yeah, she will not be forgotten, that's for sure.
She will not be forgotten. She is, you know, you ask what her place is, she's one of those shining stars of the golden age of Hollywood who somehow or other in her later years made a miraculous comeback to a whole new audience and a whole new group of people of all ages that loved her as Grace's mother in Will and Grace.
Oh, absolutely. You know, when I met her in 2003, that's one of the conversations that we had. She wanted to talk about her work on Will and Grace at that time.
It was absolutely amazing because she was introduced to an entirely new generation that didn't know her from Singing in the Rain, that didn't know her from Tammy.
That's
she
right.
She became almost a new star.
And may it go on forever. She will not soon be forgotten, and neither will Carrie Fisher.
Absolutely. It's a great loss to the entertainment world. And it's been a brutal year.
Absolutely. Not a good year for celebrities and well-known people. 2016, not a well year.
Let's hope that it gets better and that we hear better news.
Absolutely. Ellie, the King of Broadway, thank you so much for joining us. And hopefully we just send our best thoughts to the Fisher family.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Scott.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ellie, the King of Broadway, discussing his funny meeting there with Debbie Reynolds. Terry Tackett is in studio today. Terry, how's life?
Good.
Good. Now, this is a big, big story because
yeah.
Carrie Fisher dies at 60 on Tuesday, and within 24 hours, her mother, who's also a gigantic star, Debbie Reynolds, goes at 84.
Wow. Words can't even describe. I mean, that's just unthinkable, you know.
Well, and the story of it is so sad that Carrie dies. Debbie was going over to her son's house to help plan the funeral for Carrie, gets short of breath while she's there. They call the ambulance, and she dies that night.
Wow. Just, like I say, I just can't even imagine that, man.
You know, for everybody who thinks they're going through a tragedy, and it's certainly not to minimize anybody's tragedy, but can you imagine your mother and your sister, and your both of them totally unexpected.
Yeah.
Within 48 hours.
Of each other.
What Jeez. Must Todd? I think his name's Todd.
Todd. Yeah.
Todd Fisher.
Yeah.
Be going through.
I mean, that's devastating, you know. I mean, in that time frame to lose your mother and your sister, you know.
And your sister, fairly young, 60
yeah,
years 60 old.
60 years old, yeah.
Totally unexpected.
I watched something today. It was, I don't know if it was today, the Today Show or something, but they showed her one of the last pictures of her, and it showed some sort of liquor bottle or something. So they said they didn't know if she relapsed or...
You know, I hope that's not the case. She had went into cardiac arrest on a plane. I'm sure that didn't help to go into cardiac arrest while being in the air.
Right.
That couldn't have paid off. I don't think that's... I would hate to think that was what the reason was.
Yeah, I can't remember, what I was watching, Access Hollywood or something. And...
I don't know. I guess the idea is that you can die of a broken heart,
sure.
especially when you're 84 years old.
Sure, sure.
I was watching a doctor on CNN last night talk about this, and they say that a lot of times when you're that age, or even in your 70s, mm-hmm. when something traumatic happens, most people's chemistry of their body changes. Their blood pressure goes up, their heart beats faster, and if you have a minor illness that just has not been uncovered, like congestive heart failure or blocked arteries that don't move as well as they used to, that something traumatic like that mm-hmm. can unmask that problem mm-hmm. and cause a situation like this.
Like that, yeah. I've heard of some, you know, I've heard even of some people like where one of the siblings die, you know, they've been married a long time, like where the one sibling dies and then shortly after, you know, the next sibling.
Yeah, you can die of a broken heart. It's basically a shutdown because the grief is causing the heart to do
sure.
things that it shouldn't be doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's just horribly unfortunate. And to be honest, the Carrie Fisher death we did not do a whole lot with because I had never met Carrie Fisher.
Mm-hmm.
I had never interviewed Carrie Fisher. I'm the only one who is not a big fan of the Star Wars movies. So that didn't hit me in any special way.
Right.
But in 2003, I did meet Debbie Reynolds. Debbie Reynolds was performing her one-person show, I believe is what it was called, at the Palace Theater down in Columbus, or the Ohio Theater, I believe it was. One of the big theaters down in Columbus. Can't remember if it was the Palace or if it was the Ohio Theater. But Debbie Reynolds got up. This is 2003, so she would have been 71 at the time. And she got up and did this show. And when you went to see a Debbie Reynolds show, you're thinking, you know, 71 years old, she's probably going to tell stories from her career, and that'll be the part and parcel of the show. But Debbie Reynolds got up in this show. She sang her famous songs. She danced. She did tell stories. And she also did impressions. She was a fascinating person when it came to impressions. She was really a talented woman. And I think being born and bred in Hollywood certainly helped that along. Her impressions were impeccable. I know she did one of Barbara Streisand that was just amazing. But the ipso facto of that story was, of course, we wanted to get an interview with her. This is my early days of interviewing. And she wasn't able to do one that night, but she was staying the night in Columbus. So one of her people gave me her hotel room number in the hotel she was staying in and said, call her the next day and you can do an interview before she leaves town. So I did get to do about a 7-minute interview with Debbie Reynolds on the phone the next day. I guess that's unbelievably 14 years ago now. And it was only 7 minutes, but she was so kind. And the thing about it was, the night of the show, similar to what Ellie just said there, she was leaving out the stage door, and of course they had the umbrella over her head, and we just walked back there casually, and she stopped and took pictures with people. That's what she wanted to do. So somewhere in the archive, I couldn't find it today, there is a picture of me with Debbie Reynolds outside a theater in Ohio.
Oh, wow.
Just a very interesting woman, because I have interviewed a lot of people who have a famous connotation,
mm-hmm.
but there are few who are those MGM movie stars. And I always put her in that category. You know, I interviewed Ernest Borgnine. He, to me, star. Tony Curtis. He was a star. Dick Van Dyke is a star. He's still with us. And I put Debbie Reynolds right in there. She was a star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's basically a who's who of Hollywood.
That's a who's who. And we're going to play. It's only 7 minutes, and it was back in these days, we did it on cassette tape.
Ah.
So there's a little bit of crudity here, unfortunately. But you'll know it's Debbie Reynolds. And let's go back to, oh, boy, can you believe this? 2003.
Wow.
Me and Debbie Reynolds. Here's 7 minutes.
To a whole new generation of fans.
Well, it's the most fun because all of the talent that is on that show.
Okay. What is it like working on Will and Grace and being exposed to a whole new generation of fans?
Well, it's the most fun because all of the talent that is on that show, Megan and Debbie, they're just so funny, and Sean, and they're just totally the consummate actors. They work so well together. They know what each person is thinking before they think it, and so they're as well-oiled a acting group as, you know, if you act together for 5 years once a week, you know, and you rehearse all week together, you become like one.
Right.
As all these shows do, as Friends do, as the better shows do, the ones that don't work, don't work. But when the actors are so such fine talent, so I have a great time. I just am a guest, so
right, right.
I just get to go in and have a good time and leave, whereas they have a really rough schedule.
Right, right. Do you have any aspirations to appear in a sitcom of your own?
Well, if it was an ensemble piece like that, you know, where I wouldn't have all the work. When you have four people, five people like Frasier and Friends, and, you know, they have an ensemble, they have a family, they have more than five people, and so the work is split up.
Right, right.
If it was just a starring role like some of these shows, how they can keep up with it.
Right. What was your favorite movie to do and why?
My favorite movie to make was The Unthinkable Molly Brown, because I wanted to do it very badly. I saw the show in New York and with Tammy Grimes, and I just felt that was a good part
right.
for me, and I was very lucky to get to do it.
Right.
And when I got to do it, I was very excited, and I worked very, very hard. I hardly slept. I was just so... It was a very difficult role, and there was tons of dialogue and tons of dancing and singing, and it was a very hard role.
Right.
And so it was 3 months of just dedication, and I was very pleased with the performance.
Right. What was it like appearing in These Old Broads with three other leading ladies?
Well, great fun. We had great fun because Shirley and I have known each other for years, and Elizabeth and I have known each other since we're 17, Shirley since we're 19, and Joan Collins I really had not met, just like hello, when we were 19 or 20. She was at Fox Studio, so I knew them all. I knew Shirley better and Elizabeth far better. And we just got along great, because we're very professional, you'd think, after all, you have two Academy Award winners
right.
on that, and you have Joan Collins, who has all the experience in the world and is a wonderful actress.
Right.
And I've done over 50 films myself and haven't done too shabbily, so
right.
we got along very, very well, because none of them were temperamental.
Right. Which do you prefer, movies, TV, or theater?
Well, I loved the movies when I did them. And I was young, and I really loved them. But when I went into the theater, in the nightclub business, and into doing concerts, I enjoyed that more.
Right.
I enjoy what I do now today more.
Right. Is the feeling of getting on stage the same every time as it was the first time you got on stage?
Well, it's better now because I'm not at all nervous now. Maybe the first time I was a little bit nervous. My very first act, after all, I was 17 when I did my first act with Carlton Carpenter, and we sang Abba Dabba, and we were just young people, and I didn't know anything about how to really perform very well. You know, you can have talent, but if you're not trained. But that's why I was on the road. I was the last year that the Lowe's Circuit, like the Ohio Theater, it used to be a movie house. And that's where we used to go play five shows a day, called the Lowe's Houses, L-O-E-W-S. And MGM owned those. So they would send us out to learn the business, to learn how to ad-lib, cut up, you know, how to be Sophie Tucker, how to be, learn vaudeville, how to learn how to perform live.
Right. Have you ever turned down a role you wish you had not?
No, I've never turned down a role. In the old days, then, when you were under contract, they would write roles for you and then put you in them, so you really didn't have a choice. So I did films I didn't necessarily like, but I did them anyway, because if you didn't do them, they could lay you off.
Right. Right. What would you say is the biggest moment in your career?
Being nominated for the Unsinkable Molly Brown, going to the Oscars that evening, and being up for the award.
Right. And what's next in your career? What do you want to do? Or is there something you haven't done that you hope to be able to do?
I'm working on building a motion picture museum, and I hope to do that in my last years. It would be in Hollywood in Highland, where the Grauman's Chinese Theater is, and my son and I, Todd, T-O-D-D, Fisher, we're working on that now very hard. We have all a very large collection from Silent Screen era, all the Academy Award winning films, and films that were the most loved by all the world. And I don't want the great stars to ever be forgotten, Cary Grant, Betty Davis. I want to be a part of the people that saved our history. So we've rented space there, and we hope to open next year with a motion picture museum.
Right.
That is all I have left to do of a dream type thing.
Right.
Beyond that, I want to continue having good health and doing what I'm doing, performing live.
Right.
The legendary Debbie Reynolds, an interview from 2003.
Wow, it was a great interview.
Well, you know, dating back, you think about these things now, and having her gone, she pretty well got to accomplish most of her goals. Now, she never did get the museum done, I don't think, because I think she ended up selling most of that off. But at that time, she was 71, so she did go on for another 13 years and kept on working. And like I say, her stage show was very, very good.
Yeah, she seemed like she was just always a busy woman. She wanted to stay busy and, you know, and things like that.
That's right. So. If anybody wants to call in with a memory of Debbie Reynolds or anything of interest in regard to any of this unbelievable series of events with Carrie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds in the last 2 days, let us know. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. If you don't call in, we're going to have to talk politics. At your own peril. If you don't call in, we're going to have to go somewhere. Now, let's get into this, because we had Tanner Hale on yesterday. And Tanner, of course, wanted to have a political conversation. And we keep coming back to this. And it's a funny thing, because I enjoyed the conversation with Tanner yesterday. I hope people did as well. Tanner no longer considers himself a Republican.
Really?
Yeah. He said right here he believes now he's more of an independent.
Oh.
Because he doesn't see eye to eye with some of the things that the Republicans do.
Really?
Yeah.
Does he still work for them? Or?
No.
Oh.
Nope. That has come to an end.
I'll be darned. Mm.
So what do you make of that? You know Tanner. You've been here for a lot
yeah.
of that.
Hmm. That's hard to believe, because, boy, he had some staunch beliefs. You know,
well, apparently staunch changes after
yeah,
a while.
Wow, that's...
But even I brought up many questions to him yesterday, and I guess I'll bring up some of the same questions to you, because you're here. Do you believe that there is a bias in the news toward Donald Trump?
A bias towards him?
Yeah, that the news media just wants him to fail.
No, I don't think so. I think he brings a lot of it on himself.
And do you think that the news media should not cover him every day?
No, I think they definitely absolutely should cover him.
Why do so many people get infuriated by that?
Because I think a lot of people see it as a bashing, you know, and it's really not. You're just covering a story, but you're trying to get both, you know, you're trying to cover it from an independent perspective, but sometimes it's hard to do that because so many people want to jump right in with, you know.
Well, something that was interesting today, I thought, this is a current event show.
Huh?
You know, you listen to this show, you never know what you're going to get any day. Last week, you got relatives of the Three Stooges. You got the amazing Kreskin this week doing predictions for 2017. You never know what's going to pop up on this show. Now, some days it is politics because that's what's going on. I mean, we have a man who's about to take office. It's the news.
Yeah.
But today it was not the lead story. Debbie Reynolds was
right,
the lead
right,
story.
Right, yeah.
So that's where we went. So, you know, it's unfortunate that people think that there is a bias here. And let's talk personally. Let's be introspective
sure.
as the year ends.
Yeah.
Do you think we're biased?
I don't think
Why do you think that's a knock? Now, people will call in and say, here you go, you're talking about that again.
Yeah.
But the reason is, if you don't want us to talk about it, then either give a good answer as to why we're biased, or don't keep suggesting that.
Yeah.
Because I can give you many reasons as to why we're not biased.
Yeah.
We're just reporting what he's doing.
Sure. And giving our perspective.
And what else do we need to do here?
Yeah.
Now, you can turn over to many other stations right now in this time period, and you can hear Rush Limbaugh, and you can hear what a real opinion sounds like.
Yeah.
Because that's a real biased opinion. There's
sure.
no news
right.
in that program
Absolutely,
at all.
Yeah.
I don't begrudge what he does.
No.
He's making a lot of money doing it.
Sure.
But that's not a news show. You know, we report the story, and we allow people to call in and give their perspective because sometimes your perspective, I don't think there's a right or wrong. I don't know how you can have a right or wrong perspective,
mm-hmm.
but we want to hear it. We want to hear all the way
around.
You have
an informative perspective, you know.
Sure,
you
know, sure. 740-383-9944. And yesterday,
Speaking of which, I got to share a funny story with you real quick. A buddy of mine was returning a rental car to the Columbus airport at 4:30 in the morning last week, and he said he seen a lady pull up in a Range Rover and at the same, you know, rental place that he was returning the car to, and she said, is there an attendant working? And he said, there's nobody here. She said, well, I need one of those things for my luggage or whatever. So he's seen one. He goes over, gets it, pushes it to her, says, there you go, Berta. It was Berta from Two and a Half Men.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, the big lady.
The housekeeper. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was Berta.
Really? I wonder what she was doing.
And then he said afterwards he Googled it. She was in for some show. She was in town.
Oh, she's doing theater now.
Yeah, she was in Ohio for something. But he said he pushes that luggage thing towards her and says, there you go, Berta.
You know, you can find a lot of things in Ohio. If you really look around Columbus, just 45 minutes up the road,
sure.
there are great shows going
on. Yeah, yeah. The Ohio Theater seems to have a lot of good ones, and, you know, and I'm constantly on there every day checking to see what...
Oh, see who's coming to town.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, though, because 2016 has been a year where a lot of celebrities have died.
Yeah.
And it's too bad because those were the people who were out touring doing these
Absolutely.
Very professional, fun-to-watch shows.
Well, I think he said she was doing some kind of stage show. I don't know if she's at the comedy club or, you know, or something, but he said that the look on her face, because he recognized who she was.
I heard she lost a lot of weight.
Yeah, that's what I asked him. I said, did you recognize her? And he said, at first I had to do a double take, but he said, didn't, you know, he said, as soon as I heard that voice, he said, I knew.
Knew it was her.
Yeah. I said, there you go, Berta.
She did have a very unique voice.
And I said, now, of course, he said, she's returning a Range Rover. He said, I'm returning a Ford Focus.
A little different. You know, I wonder if I was just thinking about Debbie Reynolds.
Yeah.
Now, people of her generation, do you think people like Kay Ballard and Pat Carroll knew her?
Oh, I'm sure. I just wondered, did they ever work with her?
Well, that's what I was. Yeah. Maybe during the break, because Pat is pretty accessible for us.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll just call her up and ask her if she ever worked with
Debbie Reynolds.
And if she did, maybe we'll get a little perspective from her.
That'd be nice, yeah.
But just to make people angry. We will do some news because that's the focus.
That's right.
What we want to do. We want to drive people nuts.
That Benjamin Netanyahu thing. What was that? I mean, they're exchanging tweets back and forth now.
It's a tweeting world.
Oh, it's a tweet world.
You know, but I think there is regular Donald Trump, and then I think there's tweet Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because did you? First of all, now wait a second. Did you see him last night when he came out on his porch in Mar-a-Lago down there in Florida?
No, I didn't see
Okay,
that.
He spoke to the press. Now, who was standing next to him? Well, he's talking about, you know, a phone call he had with President Obama, and he's talking about being pro-Israel. Now, who's standing next to him? Don King.
Oh, boy. In Florida.
In Florida.
Okay.
Now, you're the president-elect of the United States, and you come out. Nobody else out there, but just the reporters. I'm sure there was security.
Yeah.
But who do you come out with? What do you think he said to the people? Because he was having a party, I guess, at his house. He said, Don, come on out with me.
Yeah.
And there he is in the clothes he never changes, his red, white, and blue denim jacket.
Yeah.
And he's got the American flag and the Israeli flag in his hand.
Oh.
And he's just flying them both.
Jeez.
You think Don King will get a place in the cabinet?
I think that's what his ultimate goal is. I'm sure there's probably some kind of sports committee maybe or something that he'll be a part of.
I just could not believe of all the people
to come out with,
the politicians that must have been there, big high-ranking people. You're the president-elect. You're going to be president in 23 days, and who's walking out with you? Don King.
But who likes to be on, you know, who likes to be on, you know, on camera?
But don't you think somebody would have stopped Don and said, no, the president is going to go out and speak here?
Don, he sees the moment, you know, he sees the opportunity to.
Do you think they're chummy guys, Don and Big Don?
The rumor was he was at the convention.
Well, he was at the convention. Yeah. I mean, there's no.
Yeah, so
but a lot of people were at the convention.
I don't know. I mean,
wouldn't you walk out with maybe your vice president?
Or something.
Your wife?
Wife or something.
Where's his wife?
Yeah, I haven't seen her. Yeah, everything I've been seeing here lately has just been him.
Or maybe your Secretary of State.
State, something.
Or maybe your Chief of Staff. Or did they not get invited to the party?
Well, they had to get by Don first, the other Don.
Rudy, if I was president-elect, that's who I'd walk out with.
Sure. You think from a logical standpoint, it would be more logical to walk out with. But you know, old Don, he never turns down an opportunity.
No, there was Don King. And he doesn't apparently own a tuxedo anymore. It's just denim jacket.
Maybe it's all Henrietta will let him wear.
Who's Henrietta?
His wife.
Oh, she's dead.
Oh.
She died several years ago.
I'm sorry. I didn't know.
Don, we apologize.
I'm sorry. I didn't know that. I mean,
Don's on the prowl now.
Yeah,
he's
okay.
out there living.
See, waving his flags and...
You think it's just by accident he had the Israeli flag?
Right. Yeah, I don't think that was.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah,
that's. I couldn't believe Don King standing there with him.
Right. Wow.
Now, do you think he's on the guest list for the Donald Trump parties?
I think he puts himself on the guest list for the Donald Trump.
Only in America.
Yeah,
only
right.
in America. I got to be there.
I heard today they were reflecting on some of the people that died in 2016. They were talking about Muhammad Ali. They were talking to George Foreman. And the one guy was talking about him and Muhammad Ali fighting, and he said, yeah, it looks like Muhammad Ali hit you so hard you named your kids all the same thing. And George Foreman replied and said, if you got hit by him, he said, you name your kid.
You know, I would say of all the people that died this year, and holy moly, there were big names: Nancy Reagan, Fidel Castro, John Glenn. Muhammad Ali was the biggest.
Yeah, he's...
It was truly a passing. I mean, I remember his funeral. Billy Crystal spoke, and Bill Clinton spoke, and...
It was like a who's who, wasn't it? I mean, it was just...
That was a moment where the world seemed to stop. Sports Illustrated, People Magazine, he was on the cover of everything. I think he was truly a transformational figure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't think Muhammad Ali will be soon forgotten.
No. He was definitely an iconic figure in my lifetime. I mean, there's nobody that will ever be...
quite like Muhammad
Ali.
Right,
right.
Well, I prepared all these stories yesterday for Tanner, but let's get one in to tick people off. Representative Maxine Waters made clear she has no plans to reach across the aisle to work with Donald Trump, vowing on Monday to fight the president-elect every inch of the way. The California Democrat told MSNBC correspondent Jacob Sabroff that her party has a problem of bending over backward to work with Republicans. I tell you that has been a problem in my party, Miss Waters said, that when we're in power, we're nice, we bend over backwards to work with people. Trump has stepped on everybody. He has no respect for his own colleagues, let alone those on the opposite side of the aisle. He's called names, he's lied, he's done everything to show that he doesn't have good values and he can't be trusted, she continued. Why should we work with someone that we can't trust? He'll tell you one thing today and another thing tomorrow. As a matter of fact, those people who voted for him ought to be really concerned about the fact that he has already backpedaled on some of the promises he made. I have no intention of pretending everything is all right and that we're going to work together, she added. Miss Waters says she has a duty to fight Mr. Trump on his campaign promise to repeal some of the reforms that came about after the 2008 financial crisis. What do you think?
Wow.
Representative Maxine Waters.
I mean, I think that sums it. But do we really want to be in this position again? I mean,
to fight every step of the way?
Yeah, I mean, let's just, if it makes America better, let's work, you know, let's do it.
What if in your mind, though, you don't think it'll make America better?
Well, then absolutely. I mean, boy, I don't want to quote Ted Cruz, but then you vote your conscience, you know? And I mean, if you don't think it's going to help, then...
Well, do you think what she said was her conscience?
I do. Yeah, I don't know that she necessarily was speaking for everybody, but I mean, I think she was definitely speaking for herself. And I mean, she's right on it. But like I say, if it's for the betterment of America, I mean, we've already had 8 years of this struggle where we can't get anything passed that would help us. Let's not go through another.
How do we know what would help us and what would hurt us? Because I would think that during the Bush years,
mm-hmm.
people voted for the war in Iraq.
Right.
Was that a help?
Oh, gosh, no, no, no.
People
no.
voted for the Patriot Act.
Yeah.
Was that a help?
No. Well, what I'm saying is like if there's an infrastructure, something, you know, I mean, that's going to create jobs or something.
I think you should vote for things like that.
Yeah, don't fight it. That's what I'm saying.
But the question is, just because he's the Republican president, mm-hmm. do you think the Democrats...
And I'm not saying that they have a right to, you know, to automatically pass everything. You know, I don't know if that's the word I'm looking for.
If he says he's going to repeal and replace Obamacare.
Well, I think that would be a horrible idea. Because,
now, if you're a Democrat, how do you vote there?
I would definitely vote against that. You know, there's no way you could do that because there's going to be so many millions of people now without health insurance if you do that.
So you don't go along to get along?
Not in that sense, yeah.
What about things like his tax plan, which has not been voted in yet?
I don't like that either. I mean, that just seems to me, unless there's some tweaking going on there, the initial part I heard, I don't like that.
So should the Democrats just back up and say, go ahead?
No, I mean, they should stand for what they, you know, for what they believe or whatever, but... I don't know. I mean, I'd like to see them all work together, but I know it's going to be impossible, you know.
And I think we're getting a call here. Hey, you're on the line. Go ahead.
Yes, is this Mr. Spears?
Yes.
This is the late Hermione Gingold.
I can't keep that voice up. It hurts my throat.
I know that voice.
Did I shake you up?
You did that. I thought it was all coming back. I was about to pull up the chairs and Jack Parr it with you.
Well, actually, that was my voice of a British serving lady.
I thought you were going to do Elsa Maxwell next.
You know, I can't clearly remember her voice. It was sort of scratchy voice. She was a strange woman. She had a body that was like a large tube. And Jack Parr pointed out once that it was hard to see the various features of a woman's body in her body. And she said, yes, I'm the same all around.
Well,
if you want to go on about Elsa Maxwell, she came to Lincoln once to lecture, filled a huge auditorium, lectured movie and gossip and so on. And she had several medals on her ample chest, and then she turned to leave, forgot she was on a platform of about 4 inches height, and fell flat like a tree falling on her face onto the stage.
Poor Elsa.
Yeah.
Now,
a guy came out and Well, they hold her up under her butt and then her feet eventually.
Now, what had more damage done to it, the stage or her face?
That's a very good question. It was hard to tell. Yeah, she was no beauty, but she was really vital and funny and smart. And they got her to seated position and then had to call out another man to get her the rest of the way up. She said, "No harm done," and everybody clapped. It was a memorable moment.
Now, what could she have come there to explain to you in Nebraska, Elsa Maxwell?
That's a damn good question. I think she had a kind of a set, entertaining, well, one-woman act speech about with plenty of big names in it that she'd associated with, and relatively harmless gossip, and she was a witty woman. She came on once. She got in a big fight with the legendary Walter Winchell, another columnist, the one who was often in hot water. Tough guy. I liked Winchell, but he was widely hated and widely loved. And he was the one who began his radio show, "Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. North America and all the ships at sea. Let's go to press." This is Walter Winchell. And one night, my dad and I were in the basement in Nebraska shelling black walnuts and listening to Walter Winchell. And he actually said, "And a president that we have now in the White House who doesn't know what the H-E-double-L is going on. Good night." And that hit the fan. They had a fan back then, and that hit it. And they were speaking of Harry Truman at the time. But Winchell and Elsa, since I know you want to talk only about Elsa Maxwell today.
Of course.
it's your Elsa Maxwell show. chastised him for that, got in another feud with him, came on the Jack Parr show and said, "I've discovered a new word, and it describes Walter Winchell. He's a Neanderthal man." And some people whispered to themselves, "Neanderthal." But I don't know if anybody ever told her.
You know, I'm wondering right now, when you come on, and we've talked about now Hermione Gingell and Elsa Maxwell, people listening at home, now, do they think those are maybe like plastic covers or
maybe comic strip characters or...
who were these people?
People out of obscure characters from Charles Dickens. Yeah, you got to be careful who you talk about, unless you're willing to supply a lot of footnotes and asterisks, or as people often say, asterisks, because those who say Neanderthal. But yeah, it's a problem, particularly, I'm acutely aware of it, as of no more, Scott, than 2 years ago, someone said, "Can you help me with it? Who are these Marx brothers?"
Oh.
"Who are the Marx brothers?" They took a breath and added, "And who was Johnny Carson?"
Mm.
Yikes.
Now see, that to me is too much. There is
too much.
Yeah. Elsa Maxwell might have went off to time, but Johnny Carson, that should not happen.
Yeah, they shouldn't be in the same forgotten category, should they?
No. When you think Elsa Maxwell, you know, you think, well, she was a fun lady, and I bet she was a good date, but beyond that...
Well, when you mentioned her name, I had to think for a nearest millisecond, Elsa... Oh, yes, of course, Elsa.
No, you used to work with Elsa, didn't you?
Did I what?
You worked with her when you were on the Parr show, didn't you?
No, I didn't work with her. I you know, would chat with her, because unlike the veteran older comedy writers who handed in their stuff and went home 3 hours before the show started, I always stayed and watched the taping. So much so that once Jack said, "Kid, go home, this is going to ruin your life, all these hours you're spending here." But it paid off, especially when, say, and here we go with names again that will mean nothing to some of your viewers, a night when, say, Jonathan Winters and Art Carney were on together and improvised, and it was screaming laughter.
You know,
and so I could go home and see it again on the air.
There are two things I need to say here. I don't think I've said who this is. I hope people recognize the voice. This is Dick Cavett, by the way.
If they don't, to hell with them.
That's
right?
Forget them. We don't need them. But I don't believe, you know, the other night I was watching the Dick Cavett Show, which now replays on the Decades Channel. Am I right?
Oh, you are among the lucky ones who get CBS's digital Decades channel.
Brilliant.
Called Decade.
Right.
And you can divide people into two groups. Those who say, I don't know what you're talking about. I never heard of this channel and I don't get it. And those who do get it. And you can divide them into two more groups. Those who are watching the shows because they remember them in their youth or college days and are now, you know, with walkers. And the people who are seeing them for the first time because their parents always told them, one of them told me, but their parents always harangued them with, you should have seen the Dick Cavett Show. You can't imagine what that was. And now they're seeing me with Jimmy Hoffa and with George Carlin and Jack Parr and Sophia Loren.
You know, there's another group, Dick, though. There's the group that they do watch it, but they don't get it.
They watch it, but they don't get it.
Yeah. There's that group.
And then there are people, I was just on with Pete Dominic on his radio show. Whenever he has a spare time, he would have you believe, he watches the DVD sets of the Cavett Show available on Amazon. This is not a plug.
This is like QVC.
Kind of a nice service. You know, the two books of my Times pieces, Talk Show and Brief Encounters, I also did audio books for them and read them myself. Try reading yourself from 9 to 5 2 days in a row, but people love them because I said, what's so great about it? I said, well, because every time you mention anybody, you do their voice. If it's Katharine Hepburn or Marlon Brando or Truman Capote, And they're the perfect gift for shut-ins and people in bed. Somebody's bed.
Well, what a
now, I'm not selling on your show.
No,
not at all.
That'd
no,
be horrible.
And I reassure yourself that I get probably well over 84 cents on each odd Cavett audio book at your bookstore. But they are good. I listened to one and I couldn't quit.
No, they're a winner, 100%. But I this is what I was thinking, and we're about to come up against a news break, so I want you to hold here for a second.
Oh, the hell with it.
No, well, we can't. You know, it's the news. We have to get it out there. But no,
oh, yeah, there might be some news.
Yeah, you never know. But the one thing I was thinking when I'm watching Dick Cavett on the Decades Channel, I've said this once. If I've said it once, I've said it a million times. I've said, I can't believe he didn't hold Elsa Maxwell over. Why he didn't revive her and just have her on once a week.
You have the hots for this woman, and I don't know what category
no.
to put that phenomenon in.
I thought you and Elsa in the 70s, boy, you would have been dynamite. Johnny Carson would have had to pack his bag and went home 20 years early.
Well, she wouldn't have cared for me because I'm a very bad dancer.
Is that right? Well,
actually, I'm a very good dancer in tap and such because I had great teachers, including the legendary Honey Coles. So I can do that. But a ballroom, I put my arm around the woman, I don't know when to take a step or what to do.
It never crossed your mind that, hey, Elsa, we need to book her. Bookers, get Elsa Maxwell on here. She killed in Nebraska.
Scott, I don't want to hear those four syllables again today.
Mr. Cavett, we're going to go to news. Stay with us. I know why you're here to talk today, and we're going to come back and talk about that in just a moment. So stick with us.
Okay, and you can call me Dick then.
Oh, good. I will do that. Okay. We'll be right back after this. Marion Center Mall, located at 1509 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number 740-389-5785.